Dozens of non-governmental organizations have stopped work in Russia as they await approval of their applications to operate. Among those groups are Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch. The Russian Justice Ministry is in charge of the registration process, and a statement it issued yesterday distinguished between the process of re-registration and liquidation. Marshall Goldman of Wellesley College and Harvard's Davis Center joins us from Cambridge, Massachusetts. And Marshall, what do you think? Merely bureaucracy or is this harassment?
It's a little both. Certainly the Russians love bureaucracy, but it's also harassment. Actually, we had a meeting with Putin. He said, why is the Ford Foundation spending money on non-governmental organizations in Moscow? Don't you have enough problems in the United States that need addressing? They see this as kind of a Trojan horse, bringing in Western human rights people, Western political people, with the idea of trying to create a backlash of the sort that happened in Georgia and Ukraine.
Although actually the Ford Foundation, I gather, was one of those groups whose actual offices in Moscow were in fact re-registered, according to the Justice Ministry.
Well, I don't mean to say that none of them will be re-registered, but I mean Putin still has this question. And of course, the American foundations have been leaning over backwards to make sure that they're not accused of the kinds of things that the Russians in particular are worried about, the National Democratic Institute and the International Republican Institute, which are funded actually by the U.S. government and whose purpose is to increase democracy and political participation all over the world. That's not exactly what the Putin administration sees as benefiting them.
How would you describe President Putin's view of pluralism, human rights, free speech, broadly speaking, democratization?
He mouths the words, but the concepts, I fear, escape him. It's okay as long as you're supporting the state, but the notion that there can be criticism of the state, much less of him, does not go down well. And as a result, the minute that anybody is found supporting alternative candidates or parties, they immediately are visited by the tax authorities or other forms of harassment of the sort that we're just seeing in this case with the NGOs.
If you were to try to cite some historical precedent or some other country in the world, some place that we could imagine as a model for what Russia is today, sometime after the end of Soviet rule, but hardly a thriving democracy at this point, what would you say? What is it like?
Well, this will be offensive, I suspect, but it's a corporate state, state corporatism, if you will. More and more of the companies are being renationalized, stepping away from what took place under the Yeltsin government. And they are serving as what Putin himself calls national champions. And so what you're doing is you're having a marriage between these corporate entities and the state. So, for example, Gazprom is owned primarily by the state, and it carries out the state's biddings. And if the state says, cut off the gas, Gazprom cuts off the gas. They're doing this now with an aluminum company. They're trying to do it with an aircraft company. And more you will see these kinds of things. That helps to explain, by the way, why the people at Arcelor in Luxembourg were suddenly very nervous when it looked like a Russian steel company would become one of their major holders. And that's also why the Airbus people are worried that Gazprom has bought over 5% of Airbus's stock, and they now find this elephant creeping under the tent, which turns out to be Putin or the people around him.
So a transition over some years from state socialism to state capitalism is what you're describing.
That's it. So, you have to look at where there was a corporate state. Well, you can look at Italy under Mussolini and Germany under Hitler. I don't mean to say for a second that the concentration camps are up and operating, that, way, way, way far from that. But that notion of the corporate state, or Spain, if you will.
We hear so much about what the Russians make by selling natural gas, and also some oil and some raw materials. As someone who's been looking at the Russian economy all your adult life, is there anything else shaking? Is there any manufacture of any
No, just military, which that's propped up by the state. But don't discount the oil. They now have the third largest holdings of currency and gold reserves in the world, only after China and Japan. I mean, 8 years ago, they were bankrupt. And now they're just riding high. Gazprom has the third largest capitalized value of any corporation in the world, second only to ExxonMobil and General Electric.
So
and
it may be almost a one-sector economy, but it's a hugely successful sector, you're saying.
It's a hugely successful sector, and I don't know how it happens, I must confess, but it's sifting down to the public. So you go to Moscow and you walk along the streets and the shops are more luxurious than anything we have here in Boston. They may say something about Boston, but it also says something about Moscow.
Well, does the trade-off work with the Russian people? That is, don't go out there and have any orange revolutions or purple revolutions or rose-colored revolutions. And there'll be good things in the stores, and we'll all make money off of selling natural gas.
Well, so far that seems Putin seems to be very popular. His standings are 70%. When we met with Putin in September, he was asked what are his accomplishments, and he says, "When I came into office, over 30% of the population was below the poverty line. Now it's down to about 17-18%, and there are still very poor people. This is not that new a world, but it is." Quite different than it was 8 years ago when the banks were closing, they couldn't pay their bills, and industry was in dire straits as well.
Well, Marshall Goldman, thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, thank you, Robert.
Marshall Goldman of Wellesley College and the Davis Center at Harvard, he spoke to us from Cambridge, Massachusetts.